Identical Twins, a duologue for radio by Carol Churchill. Clive and Teddy are twins. They look alike and they sound alike. Kenneth Haig plays
Clive.
And Kenneth Haig also plays
Teddy.
Identical twins.
As luck would have it, I'm ill. Just when I made up my mind to reach a decision. I still try to decide, but forget what, and go through the same vast motions over whether to struggle onto my elbow for some lemon barley or lie still with my throat burning. The more I think, the more my head hurts, till I can't tell the issue from the pain. So I must try to stop thinking. But trying to stop thinking hurts my head.
Margaret? Janet has been distant all day.
My own fault, of course, but it makes me cry because I'm doing my best to be responsible. She didn't see me cry, luckily. She never has. I haven't been so weak
the last 10 years.
I used to, as a child, after a long illness, or sometimes after a bad fight with Teddy.
Not an ordinary fight, because we had them every day.
With bricks in our playpen and knives once when we were 16.
But I do remember this feeling of collapse.
I've sent him my Christmas card and annual letter. Dear Clive and Janet, sorry I'm late with this, but I've had a touch of flu. Business is better than ever this year. We don't let the rent act get us down. You'd be surprised how many people don't know about it. I suppose there's no chance of your coming to London this year. If you can promise me a sunny day and not too many animals, I might manage to get down to see you with Margaret and the children, who join me in sending love. Teddy.
Dear Teddy and Margaret, forgive the delay, but I have been a bit under the weather. The farm has had a very good year. I know you could never stand the country, but I am in my element here. It is a shame you are always too busy to come and see us. Perhaps I will manage not to be such a stick in the mud this year and get up to London with Janet and the children, who join me in sending love. Clive.
I was horrified to get his letter.
It was enough to keep me in bed another week.
But I got up at once and dressed, feeling very faint, and went straight out into the cold.
I couldn't see across the street for the fog.
There was frost on the fields.
It cut my breath.
How can I tell if I was really ill?
Did my head only hurt because he had a headache?
There was flu about here, so I must have had the real illness, and he had the phony one. But there's no telling.
I must have a talk with Margaret.
Janet hasn't spoken to me for a week.
While I've been ill, I haven't seen Dawn.
I haven't seen Nicola while I've been ill.
I'm further than ever from reaching a decision. I will not be ill for no reason.
Having not seen Teddy for ten years and most successfully making my own life, I rarely give him a thought.
Margaret and I were awake till 3 this morning. She said,
I warn you, Teddy, I won't divorce you. She said, you're not throwing Dawn and Henry out. They're not just tenants. We've been so friendly.
You have. Early that evening, I was going into the bedroom and Henry spoke behind me. I hadn't heard him coming downstairs.
Teddy, come and have a quick one, won't you? Dawn's out.
As if I'd connive at his drinking behind her back and then he'd beat her when she got in. We'd have that to listen to as we lay in bed. What was she doing out at night?
What I can't stand, I told Margaret, is everyone counting on my squeamishness. We get rid of tenants every day. It's part of our job and we lose no sleep. Dawn and the kids can quite well go into a hostel, and if Henry forgets where he left them, it won't be a unique case. Don't you think it would be corrupt to single them out for kindness just because they're our friends?
The snag is, knowing them so well, if we shut our eyes, we'll see just how they suffer.
But why not? I'm not afraid to know what I do. They'll be no more miserable than if they were strangers. I can stand other people's suffering.
Margaret said, you can joke, but some things I don't argue about. They stay in that flat as long as they like. I'm not having them on my conscience. She won't admit I sleep with Dawn. Yesterday afternoon, Dawn sat up in bed and said,
I know, Teddy. Make Henry go and let me and the kids stay on.
I almost told Margaret that, but I didn't because I'm afraid it's what I may decide. Henry burns Dawn with cigarettes. I've seen the marks. I told Margaret that.
Help me get rid of them, I said. Henry gets on my nerves. If you love me, said Margaret, he gets on my nerves.
Last I turn away and shut my eyes because no one can make decisions on so little sleep. At 5:30, I'm hit behind the ear by a lorry and lash out. Stephen shrieks, 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 and I slam him into his bed and shout at Lizzie and try to sleep while they wail and Margaret gets up. If I left Margaret, someone else might have them in the morning. How dare he shout at my children? I get up at 6:30 and they're playing in the kitchen. I go on my hands and knees in the windy hall and put my head round the door, whinnying. Naughty horse, says Stephen, kicking my kidneys, and I carry them round the room till I feel loved again. Margaret has that smile, meaning I'm a perfect father and love her really. So I tell her if Henry isn't out in a week, I'll have the police round, and he won't like that with all the stuff he's got hidden up there. When we drink together, he talks too much. Ideally, she said, but I soon put a stop to that. What have you got that's ideal, I said. Looks? Brains? So, we haven't an ideal way of making money. We haven't an ideal way of making love. What are you going to do about it? I can't help the way I look, she said. I've the face God gave me. What a way to speak. But I could help being in this business, making money out of their misery. You've the wrong sort of ideals, I said, for someone who likes a good wine for dinner. I live up to my ideals, all right. If your ideal was to be sentimental and mercenary, you'd have a chance of living up to that. Of course I feel guilty. It's my ideal to feel guilty. I feel guilty about you, too, but I can live with it, can't I? Not neurotting about it. Am I horrible? I don't say I had an unhappy childhood. It's the way I am. I'm different from other people. Margaret's heard it before. I hustle the children into coats and boots and we go for a walk, though it's still dark.
I knew early on I was quite unique, though Mummy and Daddy couldn't tell us apart. Which is which, they would say, and I'm still waiting for them to decide. As often as not, they got it wrong. Then I had to go by his name to avoid embarrassment. As soon as we could, we got out of sight and came back for re-identification. Sometimes 4 times in a row. They'd spotted some mark, a missing button, stain on my trousers, or a spot on my face. Would I have the wrong name all week? Or had they at last seen the essential difference, but the wrong way round forever? We ran into the garden and took off our clothes. The grass was cold and the rain was wet on my back. Naughty boys.
It was Clive's idea.
It was Teddy. He made me.
It was Clive. It was Clive. I shrieked as Daddy spanked my bottom. Not me. And I told them the other's name. Now they could deduce my name.
I was right again. I cried and was comforted. Right till next time.
Last night, Janet said, I'll kill myself, Clive, I know I will. What, I said, again, for the 3rd time, is it, or the 4th? And turned over to think about Nicola and go to sleep. Every evening I say I have work to do and get to my desk where I can think of Nicola without wondering if my face shows it. I don't try to see her. We meet by chance at other people's houses. But I'm calm because I'm quite certain now. I've thought of leaving Janet before. Felt guilty, struggled with decisions, but now it's just a question of when I leave, when Nicola wants to leave, when we put into words what we both know. Every night I sit at my desk and love Nicola, I go further away from Janet. I've almost left her. I'm used to seeing her having a bath, feeding the chickens, crying, as if to a set of pictures around the house. Yesterday, I went with the children to see the cows. I leave too much of the farming to the men, but the farm flourishes. I am a farmer. I enjoy the paperwork and moments like that with the children, looking at the bullocks' sad faces and looking forward to roast beef for dinner and putting up with it. All the time, I was talking to Nicola in my head, saying, I've never felt like this before, and nor have you. You wouldn't understand such a cliché otherwise. And then I heard Susie saying, see cow, Daddy, over and over. And I saw 2 children in green duffel coats, a boy called Tom with dark hair, and a girl called Susie with fair hair. Tom was holding out his hand and a black calf was sucking his fingers, and Susie was looking up saying, see cow, Daddy, like a picture.
Out for a walk with our parents before Sunday dinner. Daddy home on leave and didn't like children grizzling when they should be happy. Especially since he couldn't understand what we were quarrelling about in secret jargon. The pond was the climax of the walk across 2 fields that seemed big enough to get lost in then, though later I was tall enough to see houses all down the side. But there was a pond, and a green, preserved, where children big enough not to fall in could play while their parents watched from outside the old Queen's Arms.
By the time we reached the pond, I was crying, and Teddy flew at me, and I fought back.
I felt hands flapping round us,
but no one could get inside the fight.
Then Daddy
picked us up, still locked together, and threw us in the pond.
I let go of Teddy as we hit the water.
When I got to the air again, I tried to drown him.
I'm walking along Knightsbridge with about 15 pounds on me. I want to buy Margaret a present. There's an old man selling matches, half blind, the sort of thing you try not to look at too closely. I find more and more lately I have to stop every time I pass one of these people and give him something. I'm getting through a couple of pounds a day. Enough of this. I don't want any matches. I gave this man 5 shillings yesterday. I walk past. The further away I get, the worse I feel. I have to stop at the corner to cross the street. I turn and run back, pulling out my wallet and cram a handful of notes into his hat. I've given him perhaps 6 pounds. Suddenly I pull all the notes out of my wallet. Some fall on the pavement. I'm clambering around on my hands and knees, thrusting them at the man and turning out my pockets, silver and coppers rolling about the place. And by now he's picked up some of the notes. I've no more left and I stand up. People have stopped to watch. The old man's cramming money inside his coat. I suddenly snatch up a couple of notes from the hat. He cries out, grabs my wrist. I shout and push him over, drop the money and run, bumping into people, with my arms over my head to protect it. There's a taxi at the traffic lights and it takes me away. Of course, I've no money to pay the driver, so I take off my watch and thrust it at him and say, "Bless you, my man, my wife is dead." I want to seem mad, or distracted with grief, to account for my behaviour. I'm driving home with Janet and the children, and a dog runs straight out and I've hit it. Perhaps I'm stunned for a moment. The dog is yelping over and over again. Susie is crying, but Tom is lying forward with his eyes half shut. Janet says, "Don't just sit there, Clive. Get out and make that dog shut up." The dog's head is there, all right, yelping, but the rest of it's under the wheel. Janet is getting Tom onto her lap. She says, "We must take him to hospital." I say, "What about the dog?" "Shoot it," she says. "There's a gun in the boot. Go on, there's a gun in the boot." "I can't," I say. Tom starts screaming. "What do you mean? Of course you can fire a gun," says Janet. I try to explain. I find it hard to kill things. It's been coming on for some time. I send the bullocks off to be slaughtered, but if I find a fly on its back at the beginning of the winter, I leave it buzzing and turning and get out of earshot, when what I should do is step on it. "Stop talking," says Janet, "and shoot the dog." "You do it," I say. She moves out from under Tom and starts the car. "Don't shoot it then," she says. "Stay here and think of something better to do." She'll take most of it away on the wheel. "Please do it, Janet," I say. "I can't. I want to get in the car and hold Tom." I show Janet how to hold the gun. All this time the dog's making these noises. Each moment has to be the last. I get her pointing the gun right and turn away. She shoots the dog.
The summer of school when I was 12, I was seduced by an oaf of 16. For a week I was uniquely ashamed and happy, then gradually it passed off. It wasn't until two terms later a friend told me the same boy had done the same to Teddy that same summer. When we walked down the street, I didn't glance aside at everyone staring. Girls half believed I was double and thought they'd go to bed between two of me. If I met two girls I liked, I'd ask them both out for the same evening and let him have the one I like least. We did that much for each other. Once we were out with two girls in a car, parked under some trees for a long time. I kept wondering how far he got and what I should do next. Halfway through the evening, we went and got some beer, and without saying anything to each other, we got back in with each other's girl. They didn't notice. I was very young. I opened the door, and there's Nicola. Only half an hour since I phoned her. I knew she would come. What else could she have done? Though I was afraid, for a moment, half an hour or so, that she'd be put off by Janet doing this. In fact, until I heard the car arrive, I was quite certain she wouldn't come, and not only that, but certain I'd never see her again. I show her Janet lying on the bed. I wish my wife asleep was a more impressive sight to show Nicola. Not that her face is ugly in repose. The bones are good enough. It's just her moods that are so unattractive. Nicola says I should take Janet to hospital. Again? Again, all that waiting about? Stomach pump? Offers of psychiatric help? Janet's as bored with it as I am.
She takes pills from time to time to frighten me, and I've stopped being frightened. She's taken some sleeping pills, and she's asleep. If she looks ill, of course I'll take her to hospital. That's why I must stay awake all night. That's why I phoned Nicola to talk to me and help me stay awake. I talk to Nicola. We keep looking at Janet, and she never looks any different. We talk about anything except ourselves. There's plenty of time. Nicola is tired. She was in bed when I phoned. Is she beautiful? I've seen better legs, a better face. But I've never noticed anyone before. So that's what a hand is. So that's what we are. I tell her I have a twin called Teddy. We talk about ourselves. We look at Janet at 6 a.m. She doesn't look any different, but she's dead. I told the hospital I was making love to Nicola in her car, and when I came in at 6, I found Janet dead and called to Nicola out of the window. I haven't even kissed Nicola yet, but it sounds unpleasant enough to be true.
At 17, I began to be myself. Clive would only wear old clothes, but I took care to be clean and fashionable.
Teddy became obsessed with new clothes, while I only wanted to be comfortable.
Clive did badly at school, but I worked hard. I was going to get on. That was what mattered to me.
Teddy worked hard, but I went for walks in the country, and that was what mattered to me.
Even other people could see the difference. I was an extrovert. I liked company. I couldn't stand being alone.
I was an introvert. I was frightened of people. Teddy got on with them. He always went to sleep first at night.
I pointed it out to people, and they saw it. It's dangerous up here, Teddy, said Dawn. The balcony's weak and plaster falls off the ceiling. She sat up in bed and told me again she can't sleep at night without checking the windows are shut, the doors shut, the gas is off, the windows are shut. I don't love you, I said. I don't want to hear how neurotic she is. She said, you don't love Margaret either. I don't want a slum in my own house. When they've gone, I'll have it done up and let the flat for £20 a week. Dawn turned over and showed me her back. Look what Henry did. I stroked her. He does it because I love you. I don't sleep with him anymore.
Since when?
Oh, long time, she said. Ever since... I hit her across the side of the head.
But I hear you, I said. I hear you.
I wish I had Henry lying there to hurt.
And you listen, she said.
Of course I do. Halfway up the stairs in the middle of the night, and Margaret pretending to be asleep.
If you did this flat up, she said, I'd keep it lovely. I could help Margaret with the housework or the children, couldn't I? Just as long as Henry wasn't there.
Then she started about the balcony.
I was poking with a broom handle at the wall where it joins on, and ever such a lot of plaster came down, I don't think it's safe to go on any more. He has put on a lot of weight, Henry. I asked her if she'd warned him. You don't want me to do that, she said.
I told her it was time to get dressed and collect her children from school.
If I was you, she said, not getting up, I'd come and have a drink with Henry one night and suggest he goes on the balcony and has a look out. Well, don't look like that, she said. It's only a joke, isn't it?
The day I came nearest to feeling fond of him was when I realized we were both separately planning to run away from each other.
We went to the station together at night. I don't remember worrying about our parents. There were two trains side by side, and we tossed a coin for direction. I got into my train and walked along the corridor. There he was in his train, walking along the corridor. He stopped and stared at me like a reflection till one of the trains moved. And we slid apart. That was my happiest time. I ring the bell.
I open the door, and there is Clive.
I'm holding Tom's hand on my left and Susie's on my right. Where's Nicola? Somewhere behind me. Then the door opens, and there he is.
He looks quite different. Is that Clive's wife? Why is she beautiful? Isn't she too young?
Does he drink too much?
Has he got VD?
Has he killed someone? Something unpleasant's happened to his face. I tell him Janet died suddenly.
Then who's the girl?
I introduced Nicola, the children's nanny. If I'd seen him in a crowded street, I wouldn't have recognized him. Who's that girl halfway up the stairs? Where's Teddy's wife? Dead too? What?
As if I'd read about him in a book or been told about him but hadn't believed he existed, and suddenly there he is, as real as I am.
Almost.
Dawn hurries upstairs.
I tell Clive she's a tenant leaving next week.
What's going on?
Margaret.
His wife.
The children all together.
Four.
Our children. Margaret says,
It's incredible.
I can't tell you apart. If Margaret were dead, would I be travelling about with Dawn pretending she was the children's nanny? Of course not. Perhaps the girl really is the nanny. Nicola keeps looking from one of us to the other.
Stop it.
Janet died suddenly. It was a shock. You must forgive me.
Janet was the beloved wife.
And Nicola is the nanny.
If so, Clive is a devoted husband. How different from me. I'll tell him how unhappy I am with Margaret, how I love Dawn.
Susie says, Two daddies.
No. I'm your Uncle Teddy.
She says, Go away. Horrid.
She cries.
So, here he is with Margaret, a cozy woman, a family man. I'll tell him when we're alone what I've been through with Janet, how I let her die, how I love Nicola.
Will I faint? Can I bear this?
It goes on and on happening.
It goes on and on happening. On and on. At last it was quiet. They all left us alone. It couldn't be helped. Clive was looking very ill and had hardly spoken all afternoon. I was always the talkative one. It was very embarrassing to be alone. We kept drinking and couldn't speak. Then in a rush I told him how unhappy I am with Margaret and Dawn, how I hate Henry, how I'm always struggling with decisions I never make. He didn't say anything for a while. I thought, of course he can't understand. He spoke so quietly I had to move closer to hear. He said Janet had killed herself and he let it happen. He said he didn't know if he'd meant her to die or not. He said he was going to marry Nicola. Murderer. Why did he come to my house? Well, can't you understand at all, he said. No, of course I can't. I would never leave Margaret for a slut like Dawn. I would never let anyone die to serve my own ends. I always knew he was capable of something terrible.
I hate him so much.
What can I do?
Of course, he calls me a murderer. He enjoys that. But I think I am. I see Janet's face, not ugly in repose, not changing. I know I love Nicola, but will I be able to get through the moments till the guilt becomes bearable? Because it will in time. I know I can live with guilt.
How ugly he is.
How many days is this going on?
Nicola.
Of course, that's the type of girl I've always liked.
Similar to Winnie, the Irish girl who lived in when I was small. Dad always beat us both on principle, but once Teddy managed it so I got it twice and he got right away, eating cherries with Winnie in the kitchen.
That skinny look is very fashionable now. Dawn is the same type, of course, but too skinny. Pitiful. What will she look like at 30? I'm ashamed that Clive knows about us. Ashamed Nicola should think that's my standard. When Nicola's in sight, Dawn withers. Not that Nicola's all that beautiful. I've seen better legs, a better face. But I've never noticed anyone before.
My children were playing happily with his. Margaret and Nicola kept saying they couldn't tell us apart. We went for a walk before Sunday dinner and wore each other's coats. The women laughed, but the children were a little upset. Tom hit us both and Lizzie cried. That night, when everyone was asleep, I went out, wanting to be alone. It was cold and the sky was moving very fast. I kept walking up and down the street. Then I noticed someone hanging about. It was him, of course. I leapt at him and we fell on the pavement and rolled over and over into the road. I wanted to hurt him.
Then we just lay there.
We felt the light and noise before the car stopped and were already up and onto the pavement as the driver leant out and cursed us.
We didn't answer, and he drove away.
We said we would live together forever with Nicola, Dawn, and all the children. And Margaret would cook for us all and pretend it wasn't happening. And Henry, we'd soon get rid of Henry. When we'd stopped laughing, we stood side by side and found we were the same height. Our shoulders were at the same level and our hips. Our feet were exactly the same size, and so were our hands, palm to palm.
We admitted our faces were identical. As I was going into the bedroom, Henry spoke behind me. I hadn't heard him coming downstairs. He said, "Teddy, come and have a quick one, won't you? Dawn's out." "All right," I said, and followed him up. It was a mistake, but now I'd said yes, I couldn't think of an excuse that would free me from following his wide bottom upstairs. I hated him for having trapped me. The room stank. I flung up the window. He poured me a large whiskey and we drank in silence. When we'd finished, he gave a confidential giggle, glancing up at me. It was supposed to mean we understood each other and he had the upper hand. "You get out by the end of the week," I said. "You've no legal right," he said. I said, "You wouldn't like the police round." He said, "That's blackmail. I could have the police round for that." We were very offhand because neither of us felt threatened. He was certain he was going to sit there forever, summoning me for a drink whenever he fancied. I was certain this was the last time. I just had to sit there long enough. "My poor wife and kiddies," he advanced formally. "You wouldn't turn them out in the street." I got up and walked over to the window. I poked the damp plaster. "When you've gone," I said, "I'll have the builders in." The balcony was filthy. Surely no one ever went on it. There was a flower box with some dried up earth, and I remember there'd been geraniums last year. Dawn had done that. "Dawn can stay here," I said, "but you must go." He was standing up and suddenly started slowly towards me. I backed away from him, but away from the window too. When I stopped, I had him between me and the open window with his back to it. Ah, what an intolerable situation. I suddenly shouted with all my strength as if the words were to kill him. "Your wife!" But I stopped there, because as if terrified of my anger, he turned and ran at the open window. I found I had grabbed him, so of course we were fighting. It was very satisfactory to bump his head on the floor, but I wanted to explain I'd saved his life. Astride him at last, I cried, "The balcony's not safe. That's all. I saved your life." We got up. One of his children was crying in the next room. I told him I'd known the balcony wasn't safe, and I'd hoped he'd go on it and be killed. Dawn had known, too. But at the last minute, I couldn't just stand there and let it happen. He poured us another drink and gave another confidential giggle. "I wouldn't have gone on the balcony," he said. "I know it's not safe. What do you take me for?" There was a knock at the door. It was Margaret. "Teddy," she said, "it is you, not Clive. Clive's looking so ill, nothing he did would surprise me. I heard a lot of noise." Henry bellowed, "Shut up at his child," and it did. He offered Margaret a drink, but she said no. I said, "I must be going too," and we went down to bed. Margaret said, "You do look ill." I said, "I'm sure he'll go now." I told him I planned to kill him. After a while, Margaret said quite calmly, "But you wouldn't really do a thing like that." We made love.
I knew Nicola would come, though I was afraid for a moment she'd be put off by Janet doing this. I was quite certain I'd never see her again. Janet didn't look any different, but she was dead.
Next morning was sunny and suggested spring and an improvement all round. I leapt out of bed as soon as I heard Stephen call and carried both children downstairs so Margaret could sleep. Their faces were cool as they leant against me. I started and made them start when I found Clive in the kitchen, asleep with his head on the table. He looked up slowly. "I must have gone to sleep. I couldn't sleep in the night. I'll go back to bed." "When's Uncle Clive going home?" said Lizzie. Every time I heard a noise, I thought it was Henry moving out. Not already, not really, but he certainly would go now he knew I'd been prepared to kill him, and especially as I'd spared him. There was a bond between us now that justified his confidential look, and the least he could do for me was go. I drew funny faces on the children's eggs and realized I didn't know whether Dawn would go with him or stay, but the doubt didn't spoil my mood.
If only I could sleep for the rest of my life.
Clive's children and Nicola came into the kitchen. She plays her game of being a nanny well, and the children love her. She said, "It's always strange when you look at me, Teddy. As if it's Clive, and he's suddenly forgotten about me." I said, "I'm surprised at that." "Well," she said, "it's not so true as it was." I said, "You must mean I'm beginning to look at you the same way as he does." "No," she said, "I mean Clive himself does look at me as if he's beginning to forget me." I said, "I expect he's feeling guilty about Janet."
"Oh, it's no good. What am I to do? Nicola."
"Nicola," I said, "I'm not going through with it." "With what?" she said. "This idea that you and Clive should stay here and me and Dawn." "Oh, why not?" she said. "Can't you arrange it?"
I told her I could have arranged it last night, but unlike Clive, I couldn't let someone die just because he was in my way. Henry was leaving, but I still wasn't interested. I've a responsibility to my wife and children. Clive can break up his family, but I won't. Nicholas says, what about Dawn? I tell her I don't love Dawn and never did. I don't think I'd fancy Dawn any more now I'm used to the look of Nicola, but I don't say that. I say again that I wouldn't leave my wife. I say I love my wife. Lizzie falls off her chair and cries, and I snatch her up and kiss her warm face.
Why can't Teddy help me?
When I heard Henry go out, I ran upstairs to see Dawn. The window was open and the sun shone in. Henry told me what happened last night, she said. You told him I wanted him to go on the balcony. That's right, I said. Was he angry? Is he going? You really hurt him when you knocked him down, she said. I was saving his life, I said. Or I thought I was. He said afterwards he knew the balcony wasn't safe.
Of course he did, said Dawn. I told him.
Her children are white-faced, dim little things, and unless I see them together, I can't tell which is which. I stroked the head of whichever one it was. Now, don't be cross, said Dawn, but I wasn't. After all, she said, he is my husband. Why should I lie to you and pretend there's nothing between me and him?
Now, don't lie, I said.
What I'd really like, she said, is for us to stay on here like we are. If just Henry left, it would be much worse for Margaret. It looks better with him here. It's better for the kids. And he doesn't mind. He can put up with you. Well, I am a bit disappointed, I said, but there you are. So we can stay on, said Dawn. I can tell Henry that for certain, can I? It won't be very comfortable, I said.
What you might do, she said, is make that balcony safe. It worries me for the children.
I said, yes, I'll get the builders in.
Despite all our efforts to avoid each other, we're the last ones up and both in the kitchen. The bottle of sleeping pills is on the table. I watch him carefully. What does he expect me to do? I would like to say something that would set things right.
Why doesn't he speak?
Clive got a glass of water and took some pills. I said, how many was that? He said, I want some rest.
If I were in his position, what would I do next?
Teddy sits down and watches.
I sit down and watch.
Clive takes more pills. This is one of those stupid things you regret later.
I take some more pills and some more.
I go on watching.
Then I lean over the table and hide my face in my arms and hope I'll go to sleep quickly. And whether it works or not is out of my hands now.
Then I get up without a word and go straight out for a walk. The night is quite mild as the day has been, and I feel better for some fresh air. I walked out to the main road and took the first bus that came and got a ticket to the end of the line. I like public transport. You're not responsible if it crashes. Is it the last bus? I asked the conductor. Yes. How lucky that is. It gives me a moment of great joy. Though I could, of course, take a taxi back.
When I was very small, I would stand with him in Mummy's triple mirror.
If we stood very close, we could almost shut it round us.
There were hundreds of reflections, all the same.
Then I was terrified to move. Not knowing which reflections would move with me. I sat on a bench all night and got a taxi home at daybreak. Margaret rushed out. Clive, she screamed. Teddy's dead. I ran after into the kitchen. He was still there. I woke up just now, Margaret was saying, and found he hadn't been to bed all night, so I came downstairs and there he was. He didn't have to do that. He could have left me or whatever he liked. I didn't want to make him unhappy. Nicola came in, shrieked, and hid her face on my chest. It only took me a moment to decide. I'm not Clive, I said. That's Clive. Nicola let go slowly. Margaret said, that's Clive? Her face shone. I heard the children coming downstairs and flap my hands. Margaret hurried to keep them out of the kitchen. Nicola came back into my arms. We came to the farm. We had to go somewhere, and Clive left me everything in his will. I warned Nicola I knew nothing about the country and didn't like it. You don't need to, she said. Clive wasn't a real farmer. The men do it all. It's good for Tom and Susie to be home, and now I'm their guardian. I must think of that. They call me Daddy. When I ask Nicola if it's me she loves, she says, what's the difference? You even kiss me the same way. But do you love me, she says. Of course, I'm doomed to it.
I follow her about this absurd farm which has all the things, cows, pigs, geese. Clive did it well. I can hardly bear her to go out of my sight and leave me alone. The neighbours think at first that I'm Clive, and I'm quick to tell them I'm not. I'm his brother Teddy. I won't be staying in the country long. I've a great deal of business to attend to in London, where sometimes I can't be bothered. They call me Clive and I let it go. I pretend to myself they all have twins. Maybe no more doomed than they are, but at least they'd know it. If Nicola had an identical twin, they would both decide to marry me. So why does she spend so many nights worrying about Margaret? Sometimes I think I'll make one effort not to kill myself. I don't want to die. Probably Clive meant me to save him. What keeps me awake is that I haven't the relief of feeling guilty. Margaret did divorce me in the end, and of course she has the custody of the children, so I go to see her. One day she said, "I'm a bit ashamed I was so happy when it was Clive that was dead, not you." I said, "What's the difference?" "You can't tell the difference." "But you're the one I love," she said crossly, missing the point. The children were all there at the time. I left soon after. Those visits are always painful, because Clive's children are sweet and I'm fond of them, but my own are the ones I love.
Kenneth Haig played both Teddy and Clive in Identical Twins by Carol Churchill. The production was by John Tiedemann.